working stiff, taking the sea bus across the harbor twice a day. Hard plastic benches, barely wider than one's shoulders, arranged in back-to-back rows so you spent the entire trip eye-to-eye with a total stranger. And that irritating recorded lecture, every single trip telling you how to use the life jackets. Fun times. The shuttles carried more people, and the commute to the ship would take a little longer than 15 minutes. But it would be the same prosaic, boring ride. At the end of it, the passengers would be hustled along to stasis pods, given a sedative, then hooked up and locked into a box the size of a coffin. Hopefully to wake up in less than 4 years ship's time at a new home. That was the plan, anyway. 10 shuttles made a total of 40 trips to move the USE colonists to the ships. A percentage of the contents of the Svalbard vaults were loaded onto each colony ship, and the shuttles were docked in the cargo holds. Then came the inevitable ceremony. Everyone had to make a speech. You'd expect the USE bigwigs to make a speech, but why did the groups from the other side of the planet feel the need? By the time we were halfway through, I had turned off my proprioception emulation to avoid falling over, virtually asleep. I reanimated Sandbox Bob to take over the video and try to look attentive. Eventually, though, they were done. Howard, our newest Bob, was making the flight with them, acting as escort, and just between Howard and me to make sure that they behaved at the other end. I hoped that was just excessive paranoia on my part, but I'd loaded Howard's cargo hold with a few of Bill's recent inventions, just in case. The colony ships had a maximum sustained acceleration of 1G, so the trip would take slightly longer than it would have for a version 1 Bob. They would be on the road for a little over 18 years. About 6 years would pass on board, but no time at all for the colonists in their stasis pods. The ships were crewed by a couple of Riker clones and a crap ton of roamers. No need for humans to risk their DNA during the voyage. I had placed the replicant matrices in the ships as one of the final tasks, thereby giving no one time to pull anything underhanded. There had been no hacking attempts, so possibly whoever it was had given up. The third ship, designated for the Spitz and the Faith Enclave, would be leaving in 4 months. They would establish the first settlement on whichever planet the USE contingent didn't pick. The first settlement's job would be to establish sufficient infrastructure for future groups to be able to settle in without undue hardship. It was the price of being first. Valter was philosophical about that. "Even second prize is still a magnificent gift," he said in his speech. 3 more vessels were already under construction. Between new builds and returning colony ships, we hoped to maintain a steady stream of exodus from Terra, as long as there were people who wanted to leave. Meanwhile, the resources left behind in the kudzu production would continue to feed an ever-shrinking populace for a long time to come. I just hoped we'd find more colonizable worlds before people started shooting at each other again. I found myself tearing up just a little as I watched the image in the holotank, which showed the colony ships passing the orbit of Mars. After more than a decade of work, of butting heads with, a bunch of buttheads, we had actually launched. It was an emotional moment. Even Homer was silent. Finally, with a groan, I stood up and stretched. "Back to the salt mines." Homer grinned at me and pulled up a list. "Stuff for today." 59. Bill.
May 2172, Epsilon Eridani.
I held an air horn over my head and pressed the button. A loud blap filled the room. All conversation ceased as every head turned towards me. "Hey, everyone, welcome to the first Bob Moot. I've built a matrix here at the Skunk Works that is more than big enough to handle everyone in the Bobiverse in VR." "Bobiverse? Really?" Garfield gave me the stink eye. I laughed. "Just thought of it. I think it's pretty good, actually." "Bobiverse. Bobnet. This galaxy may not be big enough for our ego." Garfield tried his best to look disapproving, but it's hard to fool yourselves. I looked around at my audience. Not a huge crowd at this point.
I had Riker, Homer, and the other clones from Sol. Bart and his clones in Alpha Centauri, and the Bobs on the way to Omicron Squared Eridani with the colonists.
That last group would be out of touch in another month or so when their tau got too high for VR interfacing. Hopefully by then, a few other Bobs would have picked up the scut plans and linked in. Homer cupped his hands around his mouth and gave me a loud boo. I looked around the group. Okay, guys, I'm hoping we can make this a regular thing. It helps to keep everyone up to date. Plus, it'll give you an excuse to inflict baseball on us, Bart yelled. I plead the fifth. I smiled at everyone. Meanwhile, we have beer and coffee and a pub to sit in. Shall we? We all popped over to the pub VR and settled into chairs. Time to celebrate. 60. Khan, April 2185,
82 Eridani.
Do not engage an enemy more powerful than you, and if it is unavoidable and you do have to engage, then make sure you engage it on your terms, not on your enemy's terms. Sun Tzu, Art of War.
We slowed down to sub-relativistic speeds well short of 82 Eridani.
We wanted plenty of time to scope out the situation without alerting Medeiros to our presence. Bill had made good on his promise to avenge Milo. 8 version 3 Bobs, including myself, were poised outside the system, just itching to give Medeiros a piece of our collective mind. But Medeiros had had 35 years now to establish himself.
None of us thought we'd be able to simply waltz in and whoop his butt like back at Epsilon Eridani or Alpha Centauri.
And because we have always been a cautious person, reconnaissance was going to be a major priority. We had 2 scout probes each, with heavily shielded reactors, 3 light-hour range sudars, and scud communications. And booby traps. We didn't want Medeiros getting hold of any of that tech. And we had a new weapon in reserve, courtesy of Bill's Skunkworks. We deliberately came in from Stellar North at right angles to the plane of the ecliptic. While we didn't expect Medeiros to be a two-dimensional thinker, he was, after all, military, we did expect his assets to be mostly along the ecliptic. Our probes should be able to fall through that plane before he could react. We launched the scouts across a broad front to get the best overall scan of the system. With no radio emissions and a heavily shielded reactor, there was a good chance most of them would go right through undetected. However, there was no way we were going to get away clean. Our hope was that if Medeiros detected only 1 or 2 probes, he would conclude that there was only 1 Bob out here. I sent out a meeting invitation to the rest of the squad. Within milliseconds, 7 Bobs popped into my VR. I looked around the table. Strategy session, boys. Hannibal accepted a coffee from Jeeves as he popped up a system schematic. We will watch for anything hiding behind moons or planets, not falling for that trick twice. We've got a good idea of where things are, thanks to Milo's preliminary report. Will, abruptly, Hannibal disappeared from the VR. We looked at each other in shock, then as one we abandoned our VRs and went into Framejack. Who's physically closest to Hannibal? I posed the question in reflex, although I was already checking our deployment diagram. Hannibal was at the end of the line of Bobs, with Tom next to him. Tom, got a sudar reading? Tom's response came back after a millisecond. I have a very diffuse sudar reading, but no Hannibal. Hold on. We waited for an eternal 4 milliseconds for Tom to continue. The diffuse area is spreading and thinning. I'm guessing an explosion of some kind. Everyone might want to do a full sweep and hang the surprise factor. I decided that was a good idea, and I cranked my sudar up to full power, going for a 3 light-hour full spherical ping. The response was negative, except for a vagueness, like a shadow seen out of the corner of your eye, in the direction of the system. I refocused and sent a tight beam ping in that direction. Pay dirt. Something is headed our way, guys, at very high speed, and it's cloaked, or shielded, or something, to the point that I could only see it when I was pinging straight at it. Grunts from a few of the others acknowledged the information. I've got 1-2, Barney reported. Same from Tom. It took a few milliseconds to compare notes, and we realized the 3 unidentified objects were heading our way and still accelerating. We launched 3 of our regular probes directly at them to try to get a visual. They're dodging, Fred said. I think they're expecting the probe to try to ram. Well, not a bad idea if we can manage it, I responded. But first we want telemetry. It took a little over 15 minutes at the combined velocities of the probes and the approaching objects for them to pass each other. The incoming bogey was still dodging back and forth. The probes were only able to get a frame or two of poor images as they passed by, but they managed full sonar scans. As the results popped up over our desks, courtesy of Scud Instantaneous Communications, there were gasps. Nuclear freaking bombs. He's built fission weapons. With shielded reactors and very, very large surge drives, Fred added. That jives with the readings I've been getting. I think Hannibal is just a radioactive cloud now, Tom said. We are screwed. My ass, I retorted. How long do we have until they're close enough to be able to take us out? Tom, do you have a feel for the megatonnage? There was a moment of silence before Tom popped up a sensor readout in our VRs. Because we were still in frame, Jack, it wasn't even paper. Just a raw window with a data listing. Here's the min-max analysis. We've got 4 minutes. An eternity. No chance to dodge, given their speed and spread. We don't have time to get outside the blast radii. So, Kyle said, Medeiros seems to have set this up well. He probably thinks he's outflanked us, but good. I smiled at Kyle's dry delivery. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's melt them down. 2 bobs per bomb, and I'll add a follow-up shot if needed. Everyone acknowledge when charged. We were about to roll out our secret weapon. Bill had taken the lightsaber tech, which was essentially a high-temperature ionized plasma in a magnetic bottle, and used it to build something new. He found a way to project the plasma and the magnetic field within it like a torpedo. The result was a million-degree highly charged spear that splashed against whatever it ran into and generally melted right through it, while delivering a very localized EMP. The weapon had been tested extensively at Epsilon Eridani, but this would be the first real-world use. When everyone indicated a full charge, I said, Fire. 6 plasma spikes shot out at close to light speed. One of the biggest advantages to this weapon was that it was invisible to Sudar since there was very little actual mass involved, and any other form of detection was limited by light speed. The plasma spikes couldn't follow a dodging target, but the target wouldn't know they were coming until they arrived. It took only moments for the spikes to cross the distance, and all 3 shadows disappeared. Full-on Sudar pings at the narrowest and most intense setting detected nothing but small, fragmentary blips. Ned spoke for all of us. Well, that was unsettling. Fred added, We were barely able to detect those things at all, and even that only because of Bill's Sudar improvements. Did Medeiros invent some kind of Sudar cloaking? I doubt it, I answered. He never struck us as anything but career military. I think it's more likely that the Brazilian Empire had this tech developed back on Earth. They may have uploaded all their top-secret military tech to him before sending him out. That would explain the nukes, too. So this might not be the last surprise. A round of curses and grunts answered that statement. There was silence for a few moments before Ned spoke up again. I guess we need to have another strategy session. Cloaking? Bill's face was a study in surprised interest. Yep, that's the only explanation we can come up with. I replayed the entire sequence for him in a window, including pop-ups of the sensor readings of the bombs. Well, crap. See if you can grab a sample or something. Meanwhile, I'll work on it from this end. I guess the element of surprise is gone, though. Bill gave me an informal salute and disappeared. Great. 8 of us. No, 7 now. Against an unknown number and disposition of Madeiri. I did not like the odds. Meeting, I called out. 6 other bobs popped into my VR. Bill didn't have much for us. He pointed out quite correctly that if we leave now with the intention of coming back, Medeiros will be even more prepared for us. He suggests we get our backups up to date and dive in. Easy for him to say. That was from Elmer, who had never been particularly enthusiastic about this venture. I think maybe quantum differences had left him a little light in the spine department. I was reminded of Bill Paxton's character in Aliens. I glared at Elmer for a second, then continued. We have the plasma spikes, and we have the busters. with the new controlled fusion detonation. It's not a lot. Best we can do, I think, is raise some hell before he takes us out. Make sure your dead mans are in order, do a differential, and kiss your asses goodbye. We're going in. With that, the Bobs disappeared from my VR. Seven ships turned toward the center of the system, and we began to accelerate in at 10G. The first part of our dive into the inner system was relatively easy. Medeiros was still working on the assumption that we all had the same SUDAR and that he could see anything we launched at him. By the time we'd destroyed a half dozen of his flying bombs, I guess he finally got the memo. SUDAR area pings showed everything with a surge drive scattering in all directions. At the same time, over 100 fusion sources lit up the area and started to move. Decoys, I guess. Effective, too, we had no way to know which ones were real targets. Meeting. As soon as the other Bobs showed up, I started. Okay, some of these fusion sources are decoys, probably most. But some will be Medeiri, and some will be weapons, and there will be cloaked bombs as well. Suggestions? Elmer spoke up first, which surprised me. The bombs need to be within a certain distance to do any harm. If we move as a unit and assign certain Bobs to watching for the cloaked devices, we should be able to prevent any from getting too close. And, Fred cut in, if we destroy any decoys that get within that range as well, we might be okay. Certainly better than splitting up, I conceded. But the plasma spikes are only useful until Medeiros figures it out and starts jinking around. Plus, recharging the spike cannons takes time. They aren't like Hollywood six-shooters. Then we need to do as much damage as possible before he figures it out, Tom said decisively. Let's just start blasting. Maybe no plan will throw him off a bit. That was just stupid enough to be brilliant. We looked at each other wordlessly, nodded, and got to work. It became a game of cat and mouse. Medeiros knew that we had something that could destroy his units without warning. He may have thought it was a cloaked missile. He reacted by scattering his units and using the decoys to distract us. We destroyed many units, but had no idea if we were destroying anything useful. Finally came the moment we'd been dreading. One of Medeiros's units dodged several plasma spikes and managed to get within detonation range. Barely. The resulting EMP and blast of radiation played hell with internal systems for a few moments. Fortunately, the version 3 heavens had multiple redundancies. Five of us were able to continue. The other two must have lost too much functionality. Their dead mans activated and they disappeared in reactor overload. I hoped Fred and Jackson's backups were recent and complete. But Medeiros must have twigged to the fact that our weapon didn't chase its target. In the time that it took him to send out commands at light speed, every Medeiros-controlled unit in the system was bearing down on us, jinking like crazy. Plan B, guys, split up and do as much damage as possible. We headed off in random directions, jinking as well. While we ran, I did an analysis from the recorded telemetry of Medeiros's change in tactics. His units were given orders via radio. The ones closest to Medeiros would have started the new tactic first, followed by units farther away as the signal spread from the center. The center, of course, was Medeiros. It took about 40 milliseconds to determine where he must be to within a few thousand kilometers. That was too large an area for random plasma spike shots, but not too large for intelligent busters on a mission. I transmitted the coordinates to the other Bobs, and we simultaneously launched every buster we had. At the same time, we all activated SUDAR jamming at maximum intensity. Everyone in the system was now blind, except for traditional visual and radar. The trick would be to keep it going until Hector and Tom's SCUT signals cut off without warning. I felt a pang of sorrow. They'd almost certainly been caught by a nuke. That left three of us, plus whatever busters were still going. I kept spiking fusion sources as best I could. The AMI pilots tended to be a little predictable. Many of them settled into a pattern of dodges that I could predict after several iterations. Then Barney dropped out. That left just Elmer and me. I had to give him credit. Now that things had hit the fan, he was no longer whining about the danger.
I mentally upgraded him to Michael Biehn.
Two nukes went off around me almost at the same time. They must have been a little impatient or saw their solution deteriorating, because the distance was a little too great for annihilation. Not too great for damage, though. I was dead in the water for several minutes while Guppy scrambled the roamers to replace or reroute systems. You okay, Con? It was Elmer checking up on me. A little damage. Roamers are on it. Don't try to cover me. We don't want to present a single target. No problem, dude. Having some fun of my own over here.
Surge drive online.
That's what I wanted to hear. I jammed the gas pedal all the way down to emergency level and shot away at 15 G. I wasn't able to keep that up for long, but it saved my bacon as another nuke went off behind me just out of range. Finally, when I had just about decided I'd had enough excitement for the century, the busters converged on the point in space where we believed Medeiros to be. Remote telemetry showed 44 busters bearing down on 3 Brazilian probes. The Medeiri must have finally gotten a visual warning because they turned and scattered, but it was far too late. At least half of the busters made contact of some kind before there wasn't anything left that was big enough to register as a target. Just one small problem. Destroying Medeiros didn't deactivate his units. We were still being chased by dozens of fusion signatures, at least some of which were real threats. Got any ideas, Elmer? How's your equipment, Con? Well, I'm going to need new underwear, but I'm still running. I'm not so good. My surge has gone intermittent, and I don't have time or parts to fix it. Elmer was silent for a moment, and sympathy and sadness washed over me. He was screwed, and we both knew it. I've uploaded a differential to Bill, so to quote the Celine Dion song, oh, please don't, Elmer. He laughed. Gotcha. So you turn off your Sudar jamming and run silent out of here. I'll keep blinding everyone until the last moment. Give Bill my regards. Will do, buddy. Sayonara. Hasta la vista, baby. I did as he said. Once my Sudar emitter went silent, the Brazilian units locked onto the only bright source of Sudar in the area. As I ran from the area, Elmer's relayed telemetry showed close to 50 units converging. Then he was gone.
I coasted for 2 weeks to get far enough away from 82 Eridani before I reactivated all systems.
I had given a full report to Bill, and I spent the time doing more thorough repairs. The last thing I needed was equipment failure halfway between stars.
Of the 8 Bobs that went to 82 Eridani, I was the only one left.
I think we took the Medeiri out, so I guess it was a success from that point of view. But I couldn't convince myself that the whoopin' had all been one way. I popped into Bill's VR. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Con.
Bill gave a flash of a smile. I still can't say that without wanting to yell it. We shared the standard laugh. Good names were getting a little scarce, and I was glad to have picked one that had some nerd lore behind it. Did we get all the backups? Bill shook his head, looking unhappy. 3 didn't complete. Scut bandwidth just isn't dependable enough. Lots of dropped packets and resends. I've added them to the in memoriam list. Elmer? Bill smiled, a small, sad smile. He made it. Yes, he surprised all of us, right? I nodded and let the silence extend for a few milliseconds. We're going to have to go back, you know. Bill nodded. We don't know for sure that we got all the Medeiri, even if we got all the active ones, and those AMI units will still be wandering around looking for things to blow up. Bill waved a hand. And, not to put too fine a point on it, I have to find out how he's doing that cloaking. That's a real danger to us. I rubbed my chin in thought for a second, then looked at my hand in amusement. We Bobs were so used to VR now that we felt fully human most of the time. But once in a while, the incongruousness of an action would jerk one of us back to reality. Bill, I want to be in on the next wave. I owe that to the guys we lost. It will take me 13 years to get back, so load my backup into one of the new ships. I'll send you a full, and let me know if it comes through. Okay? Bill nodded. I gave him a salute and disappeared from his VR. Medeiros, I'm coming back for you.
61. Howard, September 2188. Omicron squared, Eridani.
We'd arrived.
I can't even begin to describe the feelings of joy and relief as I passed the Kuiper Belt and officially entered the Omicron squared Eridani system.
No Vulcan cruisers flew up to intercept us, so I added a few to my VR, just because. I did a quick scan of the systems to confirm Milo's survey results and verify our orientation to the ecliptic plane. The two colony ships, Bert and Ernie, yeah, they named themselves that, yes, voluntarily, came into the system at a much more sedate 1G deceleration. They would arrive at Vulcan and Romulus a week or two behind me. I'd been thinking off and on about what it would be like to be a colony ship. The guys would be essentially running a shuttle service for up to a couple of centuries. Fly to Earth, fly to Vulcan, fly to Earth, fly somewhere else, rinse, repeat. On the other hand, they were doing a very valuable service for humanity. Any Bob could appreciate that. And with our arrival, humanity now officially no longer had all its eggs in one basket. Now perhaps we could start to think about breathing a little easier. But just a little. I dropped into the L4 point between Vulcan and Romulus and dropped a beacon. We would set up there to do initial recon and to give Colonel Butterworth and his people a chance to make a decision. Since I had 10 days or so to kill, I sent some exploration drones to each planet to expand on Milo's survey information. Then I settled back with a cup of coffee to relax. Milo had left a couple of AMIs and a bunch of autofactory drones behind to continue mining the system. The drones put the refined metals into bundles of ingots and set beacons on them. With a couple of decades of peace and quiet, the automation had accumulated several hundred thousand tons of ready-to-use material, all in orbit, inside the asteroid belt. Riker had started the AMI on building a farming donut a decade ago to provide a backup food source. It would need only to be seeded from the stocks we'd brought with us. I hoped we wouldn't need it. Of course, I didn't hope that anything like as strongly as the colonists would. Kudzu was apparently not the food of the gods, although deities were often invoked when describing it. I had quick conversations with Bill and Riker just to let them know we'd made it. Full reports would follow. Riker gave me a list of colony ships that were already launched and on their way. But no pressure, right? Exodus 1 and Exodus 2 settled into orbit without a hitch. We had a brief flurry of scud exchanges, then Bert and Ernie shut down the drives and went to station keeping. "Welcome to the home of Spock, boys." I popped into the common VR and grinned at them. They were grinning back, of course. After all, Bob. Bert and Ernie had adopted Battlestar Galactica-style uniforms and command deck VRs. I was a little surprised by that, as it hadn't been one of my favorite shows. Although the Cylons were definitely badass. "I was seriously considering putting up a couple of Vulcan cruisers to escort us in," Ernie said. I felt my face turn red, and Bert started laughing so hard he almost lost his seat. We took a minute to enjoy the joke. Belly laughs are one of the best things about being sentient, and you should never miss a chance for one. We wiped the tears from our eyes, and I pulled up a holo of the system, with Vulcan and Romulus showing in an inset window. "We'll want to push Butterworth to make a decision as quickly as possible. I want the colonists offloaded at the earliest possible date. And you guys on your way back to Earth." I gestured toward the holo. "Butterworth already has Milo's survey results, and I've been adding to the data. This isn't going to be a negotiation. He picks A or B, and we move." Ernie nodded. "Guppy advises me that Butterworth has come out of stasis, and he'll be ready to talk within an hour. I'll package it up for him. Let him have some quiet time to study it. Meeting in, say, 3 hours? Bert and I nodded, and we moved on to the next item.
"There really was never much doubt," Colonel Butterworth said with a smile. The video showed him sitting in the Exodus One's common room. "Barring significant new information coming up at this end, Vulcan makes much more sense. We will need time to establish our own food production, so a robust ecosystem will bridge that gap for us." He nodded to the camera. "Thank you for confirming biocompatibility of the local ecosystem. It settles a lot of uncertainties."
I smiled in acknowledgement. Colonel Butterworth had become much more relaxed now that his civilian population seemed to have a future. He continued in a distracted voice.
"We'll hopefully be in a position to help out the Spitz when they show up, until they have their food production set up."
He arched an eyebrow at me.
"Farm One won't be producing yet, right?"
"Not yet, Colonel. But since most of the colonists will stay in stasis until we're ready for them, ship's stores will be sufficient for the first month." Colonel Butterworth grunted.
"Still tighter than I like."
The colonel stared, rapt, at the virtual bulletin board that Bert had provided. The board showed real-time status of all current, upcoming, and completed colony setup activities. Video windows showed a constant rotation of views. Setup crews were awake and had begun shuttling printers down to Vulcan. On the surface, roamers were printing out modular residential units and assembling them. AMI-controlled bobcats and backhoes stayed just ahead of the construction, preparing the ground for the houses. In 2 days, we would start waking the first wave of civilians and shuttling them down to their new homes. And the universe would have actual Vulcans. Roddenberry would be proud.
This has been an Audible Studios production of We Are Legion, We Are Bob, Bobiverse Book 1. Written by Dennis E. Taylor. Performed by Ray Porter. Producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2016 Dennis E. Taylor. Production copyright 2016 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.